This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Pull up a chair, send the kids outside, turn off your phone, because for the next hour, you're going to be part of the Let's Talk Wheels family. I'm Mike Herzing, your host, along with Matt Perrault. And today we've got some automotive news stories to talk about, a couple of car reviews. I was driving the Chevy Silverado. No, actually the Nissan Maxima Silverado last week, but I want to talk about that too. And always, we're going to talk to some answers to your car questions that our listeners have emailed to info@letstalkwheels.com. But also, we haven't had him on for the last couple of weeks of this crazy pandemic and all this stuff happening. Our classic car guru, Jeremy Birnbaum, from our partners at classic.com. That's CLASIQ.com. I got Jeremy on the line. Man, how are things on the left coast?
Everything's going well, just slow and steady, hoping that we can start getting outside and doing something coming up soon. How are you doing?
Well, here in Texas, everything's not quite back to normal, but it's getting pretty close. People had a lot of pent-up demand to go into the Mexican food places and that kind of stuff, and so those have been pretty packed. There's a few changes going on, but you know, it's also 85 degrees, and so a lot of the outdoor stuff is everybody's ready to go to the beaches and that kind of stuff. Unfortunately for us, our beaches aren't as cold as yours.
Yeah. No, it's actually been pretty nice out here. And, you know, because of all the public places that have been closed, like the golf courses and such, all the people have been able to go out and walk on the golf courses and sit and hang out there. And they're actually talking about maybe one day a week after this is all over, keeping the golf courses open for people to enjoy the outside and walk around. So it's kind of cool to see that some good things are coming out of it.
Yes, good things are coming out of it. You know, one of the things we were talking about, there was an article in the one of the magazines about auto sales crashed in April, but they talk about reasons for optimism, all the experts. You know, also, for the first time ever, trucks have outsold cars. RVs and, you know, and not just SUVs and things, but actually trucks have outsold cars by a lot, like 17,000, 18,000 units in April. So that's pretty big. But they were talking about, TrueCar was talking about the fact that the data they monitor in the last days of April, toward the end of April, just like last week or so, is talking about that the used car market is going to rebound a little bit. Because we were talking on the show a couple weeks ago, Matt and I were talking about used cars market is tanking because they've got so many left over that auctions are just filled with used cars, and now's a good time to buy one because the prices have dropped about 20%. But that's starting to creep back up. Have you heard any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and, you know, I definitely keep my pulse more on the classic car market, and so I've been watching that a little bit more than, you know, just the general car market.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even think we saw too big of a slow on the classic car market for a lot of these cars. I mean, you look at websites like Bring a Trailer and stuff, and they're still selling, you know, over their 75% rate on their auctions. So I think, you know, the people that were in this place where in January, February, they were thinking about buying a new car, they might have held off for a little bit, figuring I'm not going to be driving it.
Right.
So I could see a little bit of a dip. But now, you know, people that needed a car in January are going to need a car once this quarantine is lifted. So
yeah.
I can see the numbers coming back up.
Yeah, I mean, they were talking about sales being down by like 80% or 90% and this kind of stuff, but it's really going to end up being like 40 to 50, which really, it's not bad, you know. And that's actually been pretty good. And they're saying the latest forecasts, they're talking about 50% drop to 40%. So it's really not going to be near as bad as we thought. All the folks were just talking about everything was just going to crash and the whole world was going to end. But the actual, this last couple days, the wholesale auction prices actually grew by 1 or 2% for the week after tanking really bad. But they're starting to creep back. So that's going to make a big difference. You know, that's...
Yeah, I think some of the companies with a little bit of money that can throw around, they're using their weight to do some arbitrage and buy things cheaply right now and hope they can sit on them for a month or two, and then they can put it all back in the market when everything opens up again. So I understand it.
Do you? Okay. All right. Now, when talking about the classic car market, what have you guys been doing on classic.com?
Yeah, we've been trying to do some, we jumped on the Facebook Live and Instagram Live kind of thing. We talked to Dave Kindig and Richard Rawlings from Gas Monkey Garage. This week we were talking with Brian from Regular Car Reviews on YouTube. I don't know if you've ever seen his channel, but they got a fabulous channel. So we'll be sitting down and talking with them today. So that's Tuesday, May 5th. So your viewers can watch or go back and look at it on Saturday after they listen to this podcast.
Oh, okay. Now, so you guys have been crazy. Now, last week we had Bo Bachman on from the Galpin Auto Group down there, and they're talking about all some of the classic and the real iconic, you know, George Barris kind of vehicles that they've redone and this kind of stuff. And you grew up in that area, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, I definitely, you know, Galpin Ford is one of the biggest dealerships in the country, I think. And I know every year they host a big car show where they have like five dealers all on one street. And they basically close down the whole street, and it's a huge car show. They open up their Galpin Gas, where they have their whole collection of cars. They have around 200 cars, movie cars, famous cars. That they bring out and customize, and it's quite a fun time. And I know that Bo is actually hosting that new garage show, correct?
Yeah, Car Kings, I think.
Car Kings.
Yeah, and so he was just really great to talk to. So, folks, if you missed it last week, go to our podcast, either the Let's Talk Wheels podcast on, you know, iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify, and you can listen to that because he was really interesting. And you know, we've had a couple of the Discovery Channel folks on the last few weeks, and they've been, all of them have just been super interesting. J.J. DeBoss was on the week, I think a couple of weeks ago, and he was pretty interesting. He listened to all their street racing stuff, and he sounds like a big old country hick, but he's really not. And some of the vehicles that they have are, you know, like NHRA level. So when they talk about we're just old country boys, you know, drag race, street racing, they're really not.
Yeah.
You know, and not if they're getting 7 seconds and, you know, this kind of stuff. But we were talking about,
I think that's the appearance they like to give off.
Yeah, I know. That's what they're trying to tell everybody, that they're hicks, but they're really not. There was an article I read from J.D. Power about their quarter one mobility confidence index. You know, everybody, especially guys in California, been talking about all the green stuff and all the artificial intelligence and all the self-driving vehicles and all that stuff is kind of on the way. And there was like everybody, especially with the Tesla folks and everything, everybody just ready for it to happen. But they did some surveys, and as a matter of fact, the confidence that people have in this self-driving stuff on a 100-point scale. So 36% of the people thought it's cool, but it's gone down to like 35 or 34. And so it makes a big difference. And Canadians were actually a little bit more interested in it. And they've dropped down from like 39 out of 100 to 36. So, you know, the battery electric vehicles, they're talking about that. But, you know, one of the things that we were talking about battery electric vehicles is that people think that I'm going to buy a battery car and it's going to be so darn cheap, and I'm not going to have to spend any money on it, and the worst I'll have to worry about is a battery in 5 years. But, you know, also I've been talking to folks that own them. You know, battery electric vehicles are heavier than standard cars. You know, on some of like the Jaguar F-Pace, the little SUV, versus the I-Pace, which is basically the same car with electric. You know, it's an EV. You know, the EV version is like 800 pounds heavier. And most electric
cars.
Yeah.
Probably does a lot for tires and that sort of thing, and brakes. You know, you're probably changing those out a little bit quicker than you would on a typical normal gas car.
That's exactly right. The suspension, the tires, the brakes, you know, that kind of just the suspension, you know, the steering rods and shocks and stuff like that, they take a beating. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I totally believe that.
You know, and people don't, you know, all this regenerative braking and everything, that's still great, but it still doesn't help that much. But, and then the having to go to the dealer, because a lot of the shops can't work on those kind of stuff, so it makes a really a big deal. And it's just fun thing about consumers are talking about, they don't believe the technology is really ready yet, and they worry about some of the things, the effect it's going to have on society. And in Canada, and actually someplace up in the northern part of the U.S., they're talking about where there's a lot of snow and really messy roads and salt on the roads. I don't know how that's going to affect battery electric vehicles. How would you think?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple things I think about. You know, I think about, as you were talking about, the autonomous driving and the battery electric vehicles and people getting a little bit more lax with the thought of my car can do everything, my car can get me there, no problem. And they become less aware while they're on the road. And like you said, in areas where there's snow and salt, roads are slippery. I don't think that people should have that false sense of security that a computer is driving them and that it's perfect, because that's not the case.
Well, you know, there's one of the parts of the survey which surprised the heck out of me, but previous, a lot of times, if you buy, you know, let's say you're one of those guys that owns a Chevy truck, and you're going to buy nothing but Chevy trucks, and same thing with Ford or Ram or whatever, okay, or Toyota and this kind of stuff, or Nissan, say, all right, once they've got you in the brand, you're set. But that's not really true for electric cars. And it's funny, 29% of American consumers and 31% of Canadian consumers, they said we might buy one in the next 4 years. But the same amount of people said, no way. And people that have actually owned one, okay, there are several big percentage of them, they don't have the numbers here, that they wouldn't buy another one. And they say because the maintenance costs were too high, the purchase price was too high, limited range, and problems in extreme weather. Okay, I can imagine where it floods all the time. You got curb deep water or more. That's not going to work with an electric car. And the one guy said it doesn't provide enough heat to clear the windows in cold weather. You know, it's funny.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about all those little things, you know, in cold weather when you're running your heater, or in hot weather when you're running your AC, you're taking that's coming directly out of the miles of your car. And I understand in a gas car that is the same case, because, you know, the gasoline is running the compressor on your AC or whatever it is. But I think the difference is really noticeable.
But what's funny is that the barriers, they talk about barriers to buying an EV, are all the same. American Canadian consumers, they think about charging station availability, which is getting better, but it's still not worth a darn. Driving range, purchase prices, that's the biggest obstacles. But what's funny is they were the exact same obstacles in 1997 when J.D. Power talked about consumer interest in electric vehicles. Remember when GM launched their little EV1 electric vehicle they had for a while?
Yeah.
And it's funny, beside all the much better the vehicles are and how much better the infrastructure is 23 years later, everybody has the same perceptions.
The same perception. Yeah, my belief, and I've always said, for me personally, the thing that would get me into an electric car is if I could charge it in the same amount of time that I could fill up a tank of gas. It's about 3.5 to 4 minutes. I timed it. And if when we get to that place, I'm a lot more interested in the electric cars, but they have to get to a place where they're comparable with the gas cars we have now.
Well, you know, you're right. And like I've got a Chevy Silverado last week, and it was, it's full up with fuel, and it says the driving range is like 575 miles. If I get a diesel, it'll be 600 and something, almost 700 miles. You know, that's hard to beat.
It is hard to beat, but one thing, and I'll play devil's advocate now for a second. The notion that we have with gas engines is we wait till we get a quarter of a tank and then we fill it up.
Right.
The reality with an electric car is you don't really have to do that. You can plug it in for 10 minutes, 5 minutes. You run into the store, let it charge for a little bit. And then that increases your mileage throughout the day, and you don't have to worry about, oh, I got an hour and a half charge coming up later, because you've made it through your whole day just doing 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And then when you get back to your house, you have a 220 volts fast charger or the slow charger. You still charge through the night, and you should be good by the next day.
Well, some of them, if you don't have the 220, it won't even last. It takes you, 16 hours to charge, So that's kind of crazy. I guess we got to think about that kind of stuff, right?
Definitely.
All right. Now, what else, real quick before we run out of time, what's happening on your site this week?
Yeah, just like I said, we have that interview with Brian from Regular Car Reviews this week, and that'll be, if you're not able to catch it live on our Facebook, that'll be on our Facebook and our YouTube channel later in the week. And aside from that, it's kind of just business as usual, you know, trying to inform the classic car community about classic cars, share the knowledge, and share the excitement.
All right, folks, that was Jeremy Berenbaum from classic.com, C-L-A-S-I-Q. Well, we got a lot of stuff happening today. We've got some great interviews. We've got Brian Johnson from Demontron RV and Camperland to talk about RVs and fifth wheels. We've got Jeremy here. We've got one of the guys from Automotive Touch Up. We got all kinds of stuff happening. We got a couple of auto reviews. It's going to be great. So hang on. Let's Talk Wheels.com. We're set up. Hey, folks. Tell you what. If you've been a fan of Let's Talk Wheels and everything, you'll know I used to do a show called the Demontron Auto Hour with my good buddy Brian Johnson. And Brian's been on the show I don't know how many times. But I've got a bunch of RV questions. I've got a bunch of people emailing in with RV stuff because obviously this is the time to have one. So we're going to talk to Brian. He works for one of the Demontron companies called Camperland. So, Brian, welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Good to be back. Good to be king, right?
It has its moments.
Well, tell you what. Tell me about your little girl, Gracie, that's, about 4 or 5 months old now?
She's 4 months. Unfortunately, she got her 4-month shots today, so Mom's not real happy about that.
I can imagine. Yeah, she is a doll.
She's not taking her anymore.
She is a cutie pie. Let me tell you what. I don't know how that happened.
Well, she got a good-looking mother.
There you go. That's it. Well, Brian, tell me, you guys have how many RV stores in the group?
We're up to 7.
7 RV, because you guys are really one of the biggest RV dealers in the country.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. You know, there's a lot of different people ask me questions, you know, like, what should I do? Get a motorhome or get a travel trailer? And then if I get a travel trailer, do I want ones that hooks on the bumper? Do I want a fifth wheel? Tell the folks a little about some of the advantages of each one.
Well, the motorized, the advantage is you just get in it and go.
Yeah.
The towables, you know, whether it be a bumper pull or fifth wheel, the advantage there is you always have a vehicle to drive after you get to your campsite.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching some kind of extreme RV show where the RV, it was in Europe, and it would raise up and you'd drive the smart car underneath it and it would squat back down and go into a little garage. It was really kind of cool but creepy too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just having to drive a smart car around. I guess if it's in Europe where you don't drive real fast, it's okay. But around here, I've been in one for a press car and it was too scary.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'll pass on that.
I think I'm safer on my motorcycle.
You probably are. At least you can get away.
I know, but car sales have tanked in the last couple of months, obviously. But RV sales really haven't, have they?
No, not really. I mean, we took a little bit of a lull at the end of March, but second half of April, it all picked right back up.
Well, who are your customers? Who's buying RVs?
You know, it's a wide variety of people. Some people are buying them to live in them. Some are buying them for recreation, you know, and as we get through this, you know, pandemic, RV sales are going to continue to increase because people aren't going to be interested in flying.
Yeah, you're right.
So buy an RV and go travel, and then you know exactly what you're around, and, you know, it's a safer way to travel right now.
Well, I know that now with the price of fuel really low, I mean, I saw diesel for $1.97 the other day. This is the time to go traveling in your RV.
Absolutely.
You know, you used to be at Demontron Chevrolet for years, and so you would sell some, you know, Chevrolet 2500 or 3500, and they'd run either a fifth wheel or a bumper pull on it. So tell the folks kind of what a fifth wheel is and the difference in the floor plan than a bumper pull.
Fifth wheels traditionally have a little bit more room. They're a little bit larger coach. Most of them, about 90% of them, are going to require a 3/4 ton to a 1 ton truck to pull it. There are some half ton towable fifth wheels. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think I would recommend towing with a half ton because it's just a lot of unit behind you.
What do they weigh?
10,000, 12,000, 15,000. I mean, they're up there. There's a few of them that are in the 6,000-7,000 range, but most of them are in the 10.
You know, you've got a whole new group of half ton diesels, you know, that'll tow 10,000 and 12,000 pounds. You know, whether it's Ram or GMC or Chevy. I mean, that Chevy 3-liter diesel with the 10 speed it is one of the nicest trucks, powertrains that I've ever driven, ever. And I just absolutely fell in love with it, especially the GMC version. Or maybe the Chevy High Country would be nice, too. But, I mean, I would think you could tow at least a bumper pull with that pretty well.
90% of the bumper pulls we sell are half-ton towable. Uh-huh. We recommend that you get sway bar control to help with the towing of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge difference once you put the sway bars on, you know, keeping control of the unit.
Okay, you talk about that. Now, a lot of the new vehicles, if we're going to get a towable, we might want to, at the same time, get the right vehicle to tow it, okay? And it's
yes.
kind of like which came first, the chicken or the egg, right? So if you're
exactly.
going to order a truck, as you used to order them for people, bring them in, doesn't Chevy and those kind of guys have all these sway controls? And it's just like one of the options?
Well, they've got all the brake controls and all the trailer and gadgets that you can do. The sway bars are just an additional help on, you know, it hooks to the trailer and to your hitch,
mm-hmm.
which basically stops the going back and forth as you're going down the freeway.
Yeah, sometimes you can wiggle the wheel a little bit too much, and all of a sudden you get this whole action happening that's
right.
kind of like a snake or something, and it gets really kind of scary.
Really hard to control it.
Yeah, and with that sway control, it'll make a big difference. I know Ford has it. You know, you guys have a Chevy store, you guys have a GMC store, and you have a Ram store, and you have a Ford store. So you guys got everybody covered. And a lot of these companies have all these things where they put the mirrors on there. So basically you've got the cameras in the back and all the blind spots. If somebody buys an RV for you, can you install all that kind of stuff? Like the Chevy, what is it, Magic, the 15 camera setup? I forgot what that called.
Well, yeah, you've got, like, the Chevrolet has it to where you have the invisible trailer.
There it is.
Which is an additional camera that you install on the back of the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you don't have that additional camera, the trucks that are equipped with the surround vision camera system,
mm-hmm.
when you put your blinker on, whether left or right, it'll, on your nav screen, will show you the left or right side of what you're towing.
It sure makes it easier because, like I said, I've had pop-ups. I've had, you know, travel trailers. I've owned RVs, a Class C and a Class A, and they're all awesome. I remember having the Class A or the Class C and being able to drive down the road and have somebody come back and open up the refrigerator and grab a drink for me or microwave a sandwich or something, which you don't have in a travel trailer. But then again, I actually can drive away and go to the store with my truck after I unhook it. So there's kind of a lot of differences, right?
There's a ton of differences. You know, there's a ton of different floor plans. There's a whole lot to it.
Well, I know that a lot of times people were talking about Class A motorhomes, which are basically folks that the actual motorhome thing, and then there's Class C, which looks like a van on the front and then a motorhome hooked on the back of it. The Class C is made for a family, but the Class A's used to be made for just a couple. Now, is that same way with the fifth wheel and the regular travel trailer? Is it a fifth wheel more aimed toward couples, or how is that working?
Well, you actually have both in all units. You get what they call bunk houses, which has the bunk beds for the kids.
Okay.
In the fifth wheel, in the towable, in the motorized.
Okay.
Or you have the couples coach is what we call it, which doesn't have the bunks. It's got a king bed or a queen bed.
Ah, so where all the magic can happen. Okay. Now, what is your standard, you know, somebody comes in, I want to spend $20,000 or $30,000. What do these things sell for? Because they're not as much as people think.
We have them as low as $99.95 for a brand new unit, you know, a 16-foot, 17-foot bunkhouse, a good starter coach. And the towables go all the way up to $80,000 with the fifth wheels.
Wow. Well, you know, when you can, you know, the trucks cost that much. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's really not bad, and there's a value drop on them. Like it used to be they did, but that was when the gas was a lot higher. Now that fuel costs are down, does that seem to help the residual value on these things?
It does help the value of these things, not to mention right now with the way the RV industry is,
uh-huh.
The values are holding pretty well due to the fact of supply and demand.
Oh, really?
You know, and the advantage of a pre-owned coach versus a new coach is, you know, when you buy a new coach, you're going to work out a few bugs the first couple of trips. Pre-owned coaches, those bugs are normally all worked out.
Ah, so do you guys have a lot of pre-owned coaches?
We have quite a few between all the different locations, yes.
Okay, now what are some of the brands that you sell?
At Camperland, we sell Sandpiper, which is a fifth wheel or a destination trailer. Mm-hmm. And then we sell Wildwood, which is either aluminum side or a fiberglass side. We sell the Wildwood FSX, which is toy haulers. And then we sell Heritage Glen, which is, again, a Wildwood. They're fiberglass side models.
Okay, now tell the folks what a toy hauler is and how popular those have become.
Toy haulers are great. So if you got a side-by-side, an ATV, even some of them, you know, you can ride your Harley in the back of it. It's basically a garage in the back of your trailer.
Okay.
That you have a ramp. And a lot of these, like the ones we carry, the ramp turns into a patio. So it kind of expands your outdoor area. You know, they're just a very versatile, very usable RV.
Okay, now, I know that we see a lot of motorhomes with the things called slide-outs, where it comes out, and you know, once you get to where you're going, you can pop it out and have more room. Do travel trailers have those?
Absolutely.
Okay.
90% of what we sell, maybe 95%, is going to have at least one slide.
Mm-hmm.
We have some of the lighter units, you know, the ones that are $99.95. Those are going to be no slides, which are, if you got a smaller engine pickup truck or a small SUV, that's what you're going to need to buy to tow, because the slides add about 500 pounds.
Okay, what is like a 20-foot travel trailer? What is something like that weigh?
Well, you get an aluminum side, you could be probably 6,000 range.
Oh.
You know, maybe even less.
Wow, that's nothing.
Depends on how many slides.
That's really, for nowadays, every truck in the world can tow. I mean, the Jeep Gladiator can tow 7,600 pounds, so that would be easy.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I got another question. They've got, speaking of Jeeps, they've got a lot of these travel trailers that are kind of built up a little bit higher. And they're kind of on top of the axle, and instead of being kind of the axle sunk into it, you know, dropped down. And for like off-roading and this kind of stuff, are those popular?
They're starting to gain popularity quite a bit. They're more popular up in the Colorado area, and it's starting to gain more popularity down here.
What are the advantages of something like that?
Well, if you're taking it off-road, you're taking it to a deer lease, say in Del Rio, that's pretty rocky.
Yeah.
It's going to give you better clearance to get through there.
Okay. Now, what about fifth wheels? I mean, that's something that where some of the beds are up over the bed of the truck, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. So, yeah, front living coaches, to where you actually have a living room in that front cap. You've got front bedrooms that have the bedroom. You even have front kitchens, which are pretty neat.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Now, do you have to have a special truck for that? Long bed, short bed? What do you have?
You're going to need at least a 3/4 ton, preferably a long bed.
Okay.
If you do have a short bed, you're going to need to be careful when, you know, turning sharp, because you don't want to hit the back of the cab.
Oh, that would be a bad thing.
Yes.
Not that I haven't seen it, but that would be a very bad thing. All right. Now, what about fifth wheel? I mean, those things have been pretty popular, and they've got it's easy to back onto and just drop it down, right?
They're very towable friendly. You know, I mean, it's like a semi-truck, basically.
Well, yeah, I know that it seemed like for years people would go out and they'd buy a travel trailer or a fifth wheel or something like that. It's kind of like a boat. And the first year you take it out 5 times, and the second year you take it out 3 times, and the third year you take it out once, and after that just once a year, right? Is that still happening?
It does happen. That's how we end up with the pre-owned units.
But I tell you what, I've got so many friends that are traveling their business, or they'll get a per diem, and they'll buy a travel trailer, and they'll be able to pay it off in a year with just what the company gives them for travel, right?
Absolutely, that happens quite a bit.
Well, it did in the oil patch, but now the oil patch has kind of dried up for a little while. But I know it'll be back. And you think is that hurting your sales right now, or does it seem to be not that bad?
Not really. You know, I figured it would hurt more than it has, but you know, the millennials are buying a lot of these units to live in them.
Oh, tell me about that.
You know, they're tired of throwing them away money on rent, and so they want to actually have something that they own, and they're buying them, and they're paying, you know, you can finance these things for up to 20 years, depending on the price.
Wow.
So relatively low payments, and you just pay a rental fee for the slot at an RV park.
Okay, now, did they have, I remember years ago they had something called a park model, where you would basically take it and park it, and that was really what it was designed for. Do they still have those, or is that not popular anymore?
No, they still have them. We sell probably 2 or 3 a year.
Oh.
at this location. Some of our other locations are a little bit more popular. You know, we carry the Sandpiper Park models and the Wildwood Park models.
Okay, tell the folks what the, some of the differences is if they want a park model, like for a deer lease or something?
Park model is going to be a little bit taller trailer. It's almost, it's a towable unit that's got fifth wheel room.
Oh, okay. Well, what's why you know, wouldn't people just buy them all the time?
They're, well, you're going to have 3/4 ton to tow it, sometimes a 1 ton. So okay. That's part of it. They're bulky, so if you are going to be traveling quite a bit, it's not something that you want to tow on a regular basis.
Ah, so it may not be quite as aerodynamic. Now, also, we were talking. Speaking of that, do these things kill your fuel economy, or is there ways to help that?
Well, I mean, they're definitely rough on the fuel economy, but they're you know, they got V nose on some of them. They're as aerodynamic as you could possibly be, with still maintaining room.
Okay. Now, people also ask me all the time, you know, do I have to have a special driver's license for this stuff to pull a fifth wheel, or how does that kind of work?
You know, a Class C license, you can drive any RV.
Okay. All right. Now, what about insurance? Is that really crazy, or is it not so bad?
No, it's very affordable. You know, most of these are utilized as recreational vehicles, so it's not something that's on the road on a regular basis. And all your major insurance carriers quote, and it's relatively inexpensive.
Okay, now these brands, I mean, we'll get to the last couple of questions. Where, you know, it seems like boat brands, there are some boat brands that are nationwide, you see them everywhere, and then there are some brands that are like regionals because they don't want to ship them, okay? And are RVs like that, or they're just national brands?
RVs pretty much national because people with RVs don't mind driving.
Ah.
So, I mean, it's we sell RVs all over the country. You know, it's slowed down a little bit with airlines and whatnot, but in the past, it's not uncommon for us to pick somebody up at Intercontinental and bring them back to the dealership to pick up their diesel pusher RV.
Oh, okay. Well, you do that, and if somebody just drives in, because I know a lot of times you can get such good deals on RVs that may not be in your area. You know what I mean? I've got guys from Vegas that'll go into California. Well, they won't go to California because they're more expensive, but if people from California will come to Texas and buy an RV and drive off with it and do a big tour of the country, and they take it back to their state, and they've got the deal, you know, several thousand dollars cheaper.
Oh, all the time.
All the time. It's easy. So basically, is Texas one of the cheaper places to buy an RV?
Well, we're just a very friendly state, so we're easy to work with.
Easy to work with. All right, now financing is not real hard on this. Are the rates pretty decent?
Oh, yeah, rates are as low as 3.9%, which on recreational vehicles is phenomenal because traditionally a recreational vehicle is 2 or 3 points higher than what you can get on a car.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, with rates as low as they are now, like I said, I've seen them at 3.9% in the last few weeks.
Okay, now tell us about the Camperland and those kind of guys. You have a website where you can go send people to go to and check
this
stuff out?
Yeah, camperland.net, and that's just this location, or you can go out to demontrondrv.com, shows our other locations with the motorized.
Now, if somebody wanted to come in and buy a new Chevy truck or a GMC or Ford or whatever and then get a camper with it, can you guys help them with that whole transaction?
Absolutely.
That's not a problem then. Okay, now you guys are camperland.net, right? Or demontrondrv.com, right? All right, cool.
Yep.
Man, Brian, thanks for talking to us again today, and we'll have to get you back on in a couple weeks.
Sounds good to me.
All right, thanks, buddy. All right, folks, that was Brian Johnson from Demontrond RV and Camperland.net. Hey, folks, welcome back to What's Stock Wheels. You know, we've been talking about this coverage of the COVID-19 virus, and it's been a pretty big deal, folks. I mean, it's kind of crazy. And I remember I had a story a week or two ago on the show about how the insurance companies, God bless them, they're awesome. They're giving us all this money back because we're not really driving. Well, I got some information from a company called ValChoice, and on the phone we have their founder and CEO, Dan Carr, and Dan's going to tell us that maybe the insurance companies didn't do us quite a big favor as we thought. So, Dan, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you.
So, all right, we did this story, and it was made national news about an insurance company's going to give us this big rebate and everything, and I know it wasn't very much. It sounded really cool, but it really wasn't much, but it's actually even less than that. Tell us what the real deal is and what your company does.
Yeah, so my company, it's called ValChoice. We're found at valchoice.com, and we're a data analytics company that analyzes car and home insurance companies for consumers, provide lots of free information for consumers in terms of calculators and analysis and things like that to help them buy insurance. And this comes out of a personal situation for me. I was hit by a car.
Uh-oh.
And none of the insurance companies involved would pay my medical bills. So after years of fighting to get the money back, I left my career in technology and started this tech company to bring transparency to insurance. So that's the backstory on it.
All right. So tell us what about this deal, because I said it made national news and it sounded so cool, but all right, tell us the real deal, big guy.
Yeah, so, you know, it was commendable. It was nice that the industry took some action. We liken it to kind of like someone giving you the sleeves of their vest. You didn't really get a lot when it was all done. and the reason for that is, you know, the driving is down so dramatically. I see places where driving's down over 90%. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of families with one or two or even more cars just sitting in their driveway or parked in their garage. And what happens in that situation is the risk to insure those cars goes almost to zero, goes down very, very low. And so the commendable action by the insurance industry was announce these huge numbers. It amounted to billions of dollars that was being rebated to people. But when you spread it across the entire customer base, it came out to, in a lot of cases, it's $20, $25. It's not very much at all, where people are paying, you know, $1,000 per year on average to insure a car. And the real cost of insuring is much lower. So it was, it made great PR headlines. It was a great move from that perspective. It didn't really solve any customers' problems that have a need for cash while they're, you know, maybe lost their job or, you know, their life has just changed, completely disrupted because of this pandemic. So we have ways of helping people understand what they really should be able to get and how to go back and get that, how to work to get that. And I can go into that in more detail if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, because insurance is one of those industries that, hey, they run the world, believe it or not. They're like one of the major owners of real estate in the U.S. But you know, it's so much gobbledygook legalese and things like that that it's hard to understand what really is the real deal. Just like everybody thinks they're giving back billions of dollars, and people are thinking, well, I'll get a couple $100 back. No, you're getting 15 or 20. And so tell us a little bit about how this really works.
Yeah, well, so let's start with your point about how complicated it is, because it's actually not as complicated as the industry would like people to think it is.
Right.
And by making it opaque or, you know, hard to understand, not transparent, not really understanding what's going on, that does make it complicated. So we build tools. Our company, we build tools so consumers can learn about insurance in kind of a fun way. For example, we have calculators on our website. Mm-hmm. So somebody can go to the website and go to the car insurance calculator, and it'll walk them right through how car insurance is priced based on where they live. And it's different from state to state, and we take all that into account. And so now, and we even have instructions right beside the calculator. If you're on a desktop, if you're on a mobile, it's below. And it says, okay, when you get to this place, look here, because here's where you can get savings because of COVID-19. And so we walk people right through that process, and it depends on a few things. It depends on your personal situation. Do you have a car that's parked and you're not using anymore? Do you have a company that's willing to furlough that car because it's parked? Some companies will, some companies won't.
Okay.
And so, but we show people those trade-offs so they can say, here's what I think I should get. And now they understand how it works, and they can go to their agent and say, this is what I think I deserve, and have a conversation about it, not get flummoxed by the response that comes back.
You know, you're absolutely right, because you're right. These vehicles are sitting. I've got a lot of people telling me my battery's going dead because I haven't even driven this thing in 3 weeks. I've got a vehicle I haven't driven in four or five weeks, and so it makes a big difference. But, you know, it's funny. All they see is commercials is everybody can save 15 to 40% or more on their car insurance. And I get these things from AAA and all that stuff. Hey, we're going to save you this much money. But when you really go and work it out, they really don't.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it kind of being intentionally complicated. And that's really what we try and solve. You know, make it understandable so that people can be in control of that, not be a victim of it.
Well, we all know that they've got to make a living. I understand that. And they have stockholders and things like that. Or sometimes it's a mutual company. And just like I had homeowners insurance, and I was paying about, you know, $2,800 a year, and I've got my agent, which I've had for 30 years, and he came and said, you know, I've got this new company came in, they're AAA rated, and they're, you know, they're top rated and things like that, and I can save you $1,000 a year. Well, that's like, you know, 30%, and they were great, and so I even had a claim with them, and they were still great. So, you know what, you can save money if you happen to know what you're doing or have somebody that knows what they're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That you can. And, you know, there's a couple of things to look at. I think there's kind of two types of buyers for insurance. Mm-hmm. Most buyers are price buyers because we're told there's $5 billion spent by the three largest companies every year on advertising. That's a huge amount of money in advertising. And they're constantly telling us price, 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 price.
Right.
But then you get into the transaction, and it's so complicated, you don't really know if you save money or not a lot of times. But then the other type of buyer is quality. And some people want to know that they really have a good product. We provide both. So we rate every single company in the industry by state. And so when you look at how many auto and home insurance companies there are across all the 50 states, we grade about 25,000 companies.
Wow.
And so now people are going to say, well, what do I care about? Do I care about only about price? Do I care about the quality? And they can look at it both ways on our website and then make a decision. And they, you know, they go together. So the whole idea is transparency, so people know what they're getting and get what they need.
So I can go on your site, look at, you know, put in my zip code and all my stuff, and find apples to apples. Will it even look at my driving record?
We don't pull that up.
Okay.
So what we do is, as you're going through the calculator, the car calculator, you can enter that, and it'll show you how to adjust the price.
Ah, okay.
We don't save that information, so you can do this all privately. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, we give people the option, you know, if you're not enjoying this process, we can put you in touch with somebody. But if they just want to use it to learn and then go back to their agent, that's absolutely fine.
Well, you know, you're right, because there's a lot of agents that are only – they're captive, okay? That's like they're only State Farm, or they're only USAA, or they're only so-and-so. You know what I mean? And that's
right.
Great. But if you have an agent that's independent, he can look at this, and a lot of times that's a better deal. You know, most of the time, for me, it's always been a better deal. And so it just makes a big difference. But having you can actually maybe double check what we've been getting. You know what I mean? I think that's a great idea. It's valchoice.com. Folks, we're talking to the CEO of the Valchoice, Dan Carr, and he's been telling us about how to find the best deal on car insurance. Of course, you know, you watch these commercials, you know, Liberty Mutual this and all that kind of stuff. I can imagine how much, like you said, how much they spend on that stuff. But it's always about price. It's never about the claims, is it?
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so if somebody wants to get to the calculator, just type in Valchoice, VALCHOICE.com/car. It'll take you to the calculator, and then you can go to your state if you want to. We have all kinds of information on the state page, including who the five best companies are in the state. So we list all that so people can – and it's not the companies that you heard of. You know, it's not the ones that are advertising on TV, because they're more advertising companies. The ones that are focusing on being insurance companies, a lot of people don't know who they are. They're not spending their money on ads.
You know, you're exactly right, because I know the last two or three homeowners, eight companies I've had, I've never heard of them before, and I go with check with the State Board of Insurance, and they've got a great record, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I know in Texas they have the State Board of Insurance that kind of regulates that kind of stuff and keeps these people in line. And it seems to work. I mean, I signed up with Safeco, and come to find out they use Liberty Mutual as for their insurer. And that's kind of odd, but that's just how it is. And, you know, so it's very convoluted. I'm glad we have somebody like you and your company to help us get through all this.
It's a kind of a mission for us. It was such a bad experience when I couldn't get my medical bills paid. I had to pay them personally, or it would have ruined my credit.
Right.
And for a lot of people, that would mean going bankrupt. And I left the last session with the insurance company attorneys, and I looked my attorney in the eye and I said, "I can't believe this happened. I vowed to fix it somehow. I didn't know how at that point, but yeah, I've been working on it for 7 years now."
Now, Dan. Well, I was looking at a press release that you guys sent out that a lot of the companies that gave us these discounts, if you look earlier in the year, they all went up on their prices. So they're really giving it as a discount of the other, you know, they may have gone up $60, but they gave us $15 back.
Yeah.
Did they ever mention that?
No, That's been kind of silent. There hasn't been a lot of talk about that. It was interesting. I had some of the big TV networks talking to me about what was going on as all these announcements were coming out. And so my name, the company name, got out there a little bit, and consumers started reaching out to us really angry,
right,
because they were getting these price increases at the same time as they were getting their quote-unquote payback. And you know, some of them are saying, I think this should turn into a very negative view on the industry, but it won't, because you know, there's just so much money spent on advertising by the industry that it, you know, it's, you can kind of spin things in a positive way when you have enough money to spend, basically.
You know, you're exactly right. And, you know, you have all these things like we're the good hands people, or we're the this, we're here for you and all that other stuff. But they sure weren't there for you, were they?
No, there were actually three companies involved, including my health insurance company. And I recently was in a hotel in Philadelphia before the whole pandemic started,
mm-hmm.
and I was exercising, and there were like three insurance company ads on in a row. And then there was a different one. Then the next break, there were two out of three, and I thought, man, this is crazy. When I got back to my room, I turned on the TV, and there was another insurance company ad on. So I sat down, and I said, you know, these companies are spending $1 billion a year on advertising. How many times could they have paid my claim out of their advertising budget with two companies involved? And you know, just everybody would have been happy. And the answer was 24,000 times.
Oh.
But still, it was worth the effort to fight me for years.
You know, like, for example, except for two or three years ago, I never heard of Liberty Mutual. Now you hear them every time you watch TV, and they target – you know, a lot of the channels that certain people, certain age groups will watch. You know what I mean? And so it's really, These are really smart folks.
Yeah. They, I mean, you look at the companies with the big advertising budgets and they're really growing. It's advertising works. You know, this is a business where there's not a lot of interaction between the consumer and the company. And so if you keep telling the consumer how great you are,
yep,
they believe it, whether it's true or not.
Well, you know, it's funny. People always think of health insurance companies as the evil, you know, the dark side. They're the, you know, the Darth Vader of insurance industry. But it's really not them. They seem to do okay. They just don't advertise, right?
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. You don't have as many options there. I think that's probably part of the reason.
Yeah, I know that, because you're right. There's a gazillion insurance companies, and some of them, you know, specialize on the folks that have let their insurance lapse, and
yeah,
you know, that's their market. They have the market where people just want 30 days worth of insurance so they can get their driver's license renewed or something like that, and that's sad. But and then there are the ones that have been around forever, you know, the big ones like, you know, State Farm and Allstate and Farmers and USAA and those kind of guys. But I'm glad we have now a website. We can really find out apples to apples, oranges to oranges. This is what I'm getting. This is my neighborhood. This is because what the price is in, you know, in Florida is not the price in Texas or the price in New Hampshire, right?
Oh, yeah. It varies a lot. Yeah. From lowest to highest state, it's almost double based on average prices before you even factor in driving record and address and things like that. Yeah, there's a big difference.
That's nuts. I tell you what, Dan, I tell you what, this has been really interesting. I know that we can go to ValChoice, ValChoice.com, and learn about it. Dan, thanks for joining us today. It's been really, really informative.
Can I just add one tip at the end?
Absolutely.
Here? After that, ValChoice.com, uh-huh, put in /car.
/car.
That's going to take you to the car insurance calculator.
Okay.
Click on your state. So there's a map there with your state, and now we have very specific information from the state. And so here's the tip. As you're going through it, look at how you use your car. Do you use it to commute? Probably not anymore. So that's
right.
Pleasure. That's a savings. Look at the mileage. Some of the companies will allow you to change your mileage. Some of the companies force you to have like a web app or a telematics device to change mileage. I think they should all let people change their mileage right now. They could do that if they wanted to, because that's a big savings. People aren't driving. And then if you have multiple cars, could you furlough a car? Could you put it in layaway, basically?
Yeah.
And so now you keep a minimum level of insurance on it, you know, at least comprehensive, so it's still in the policy, because you don't want it to go uninsured. And if you don't have a loan or lease, you have to have a collision as well, but you can change the deductibles on those. And then if you take off the liability insurance, you can save a lot of money by furloughing a car. Some companies won't allow this, but other companies will. And so it's case by case, and I've talked to a lot of agents around the country about this. You know, people, they don't want you to do this because it's a huge reduction in revenue for
them. Yeah,
it's
free money for them. There's no risk.
Yeah. So a lot of people are going to get pushback, but there are a number of companies that will do it.
All right, Nat, thanks a lot. So that's valchoice.com/car, and that'll find us out about that. Matt, Dan, thanks for joining us today. It's been really interesting, and hopefully we can have you on again in a few months.
Okay, sounds good. Hopefully everybody's doing well by then. We're past the pandemic.
Oh, heck yeah. I appreciate that. All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Hey, folks, I tell you what, we were talking earlier in the show about our folks from Automotive Touch-Up. Now, these are our friends. We've had them on the show a couple times before, and they've always been great. But these folks, based in New Orleans, are right in the middle of this pandemic stuff, and they've been producing some PPE stuff and things like that. I've got Paul Fernandez on the line. He's going to talk to us about that. Paul, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am living the dream, big guy. I tell you what, it's been awesome. Things are loosening up here in Texas, but how are things in New Orleans?
New Orleans was, for how small of a city it is compared to a lot of the larger cities in the country, was hit pretty hard. You know, a lot of it had to do probably with Mardi Gras. We had a lot of people come in right as this was really getting started. So, and it's just, you know, high numbers of cases, high numbers of death tolls. It keeps people a little on edge, but we've been able to operate and we're on a limited staff kind of basis, but we're still trying to just pump out as many orders as we can every day and try to get them out there to our customers.
Okay, besides doing this, we're going to get into the automotive touch-up stuff that you do, but you guys have started producing some hand sanitizers and some other, so you've kind of changed your business model a little bit for a while, right?
A little bit. We're doing we're trying to juggle both, and we've dedicated a few people basically to just doing some hand sanitizer. It's not for sale. It's for personal use. It's for them to give to their families or friends. And we donated probably, I'm going to say, 75 to 80% of it to local area hospitals.
Well, that's cool stuff. Well, let's move on to the most important thing. You know, everybody has a car. Cars are great. We all love them, cars and trucks and things like that. But if you've got a truck, like I have a little Toyota truck that I don't use very often, and it's an older Tundra, and I get little scratches on it, you know, and I'm like, the thing's in great shape, and I'll end up putting one kind of scratch on it someplace, and I'm going, if I take it to the body shop, it's going to cost me $800 to have them, you know, sand it all down and do the base coat and then the paint and then the clear coat, and it's going to take several days. But I've ordered some stuff from you guys and get it, and it works. Now, tell the folks what kind of magic you put in these little bottles here.
Well, there's no real magic. We use the highest quality paint that our line of paint that we, you know, purchase is available. So, I mean, a lot of touch-up companies, they use kind of bottom of the barrel, the cheapest lines there are. They don't get the best matches, paint quality. It's not as durable. It doesn't last as long. Its shelf life usually isn't as well either. But, I mean, our main thing is just we want to provide you with something that's of a high quality just to make sure that it's gonna help you the way it needs to.
Let's say I've got a Silverado and I put a scratch in it, or I've got a Ford F-150 or a Mercedes or whatever, whatever vehicle. And I want to figure out, I need to get some touch-up paint. I really just want it. I don't want it to rust. I don't want it to look funky. But I don't want it to look gaudy, looks like. Because I've done it before where it looks like you just took a magic marker and did this or that. And I know everybody sells these waxes that say it gets rid of scratches, which is bull.
Sure.
What am I going to get from you guys, and how am I going to do it?
Well, what you get from us is really up to you. I mean, you know, we sell touch-up bottles, half-ounce, 2-ounce bottles, and that includes base coat, clear coat, primer. We sell paint pens, same thing, base coat, clear coat, primer. We sell aerosol cans, and I'll stand by our aerosol cans as being the best aerosol touch-up on the market, period. And it's we do kind of a lacquer and urethane, acrylic lacquer and urethane hybrid, sort of, and The best thing about it is that, like I said, we use extremely high quality paint. So the fact that we do a lacquer and urethane hybrid means that it works really well with a lacquer clear or a lacquer primer, but it also works extremely well with a urethane clear or a urethane primer.
Okay.
And we also do RTS products, pints, quarts, gallons, for anyone who's a little more confident or has the equipment or the experience and are willing to use a spray gun and a compressor.
Okay, now, folks, we're talking to Paul Fernandez from Automotive Touch-Up, and if you can go to automotivetouchup.com. But, Paul, tell the folks about base coat, base coat, paint the coat, and then the clear coat. Tell the folks what those things mean in English for them.
Okay, so base coat, clear coat is basically a two-stage process.
Okay.
Now, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way probably until the mid-80s, single stage was the standard in the business.
Right.
Basically, one coat, you spray it, it goes on, it's already shiny, you don't need a clear coat. Now, that changed over time. People could get better matches, more consistency through actual car manufacturers from one car to another or one plant to another in terms of actual, the color matching from one to the next. But so once it changed in the mid-80s, it became a base coat, clear coat. That's what we call a two-stage. Base coat is basically, you could put primer, but in some cases it's not necessary. But base coat and clear coat. So that's basically what entails a two-stage.
Yeah, I remember the days when people say, I've got the paint job on my motorcycle gas tank, and it's like 13 coats of lacquer and all that other stuff. And I was like, what happened to those days? And evidently, the chemicals that are in that type of paint, that not only the fact that it didn't really hold up in the sun, but the chemicals in those kind of paint, you can't really use them anymore, right?
I think another thing that happened is a lot of single stages.
Yep.
From before the mid-80s, and the further back you go, is a lot of these colors were basically urethanes, and those urethanes contained a lot of lead-based toners, and, it probably took us 40, 50 years for us to realize, that's not good for us, and let's probably try to eliminate that from the market over time. And it's kind of getting to the point now where lead-based toners are almost, obsolete and completely extinct. And, I don't even know if we have any left in the building. Once upon a time, 15 years ago at this company, we had a lot of lead-based toners because we still mixed a lot of those colors. But now, not so much.
Oh, I know. I think I ate too many lead paint chips when I was a kid or something. But
that
could be my excuse. That could be my excuse. All right, I order this for you. I figured out if I've just got a couple scratches, I can order a small bottle. What about sanding it or cleaning it up or any kind of instructions? Does that stuff come with it?
Well, the best thing you can do
is
just follow instructions on our packaging.
Perfect.
And obviously, prep work is, when they say, people who work out a lot, it's probably 75 or 80% nutrition and 20% of what you actually do. Well, the same goes for this, right? So the application and everything, that's very, very important. But if you don't prep the surface properly, you're never going to get a good result anyway. So you have to make sure your surface is clean of contaminants. It's sanded properly. It's primed properly. Everything's clean. It's ready. You can use tack cloth to get off any little bits of dust, dirt, anything on the surface before you proceed to a base coat or a clear coat or anything like that.
Well, the only other touch-up paint I've seen is several years ago. You get something and just came with a little bitty, a little bitty bottle, like models like we used to use with model airplanes when you're building those kind of car models and stuff.
Right.
And it would just put a little one little stripe there on the scratch and walk away. But you'd look at it and all of a sudden it would just stand out like whatever, because you could just walk past it and just see this big stripe that you just put on in the paint, and it just didn't match. So you guys have a process where we can just sand it down, we can do this, we can do that, and it all takes
I was going to say not just that, but with touch-up bottles, with a brush, sometimes those brushes have a little bit of a wide fan, and, it is a little difficult to just go over a scratch
right.
and have it, just disappear. It's not going to just disappear. You know, there's some blending involved, and that's why aerosol's always the number one option. It's easier to blend into adjacent panels or adjacent areas. But the real thing with touch-up, using a half-ounce bottle or two-ounce bottle or anything like that, is you can buy things from us called micro-dabbers. You can get them other places, too, probably, but it's, you know, it's convenient to buy them from the same place you buy your paint. And really what they're good at is they are a tiny, tiny, tiny felt tip on a little plastic stick. And when I say it, like, I mean, like, not even maybe an eighth of a drop of paint.
Oh.
It can transfer that small of an amount.
Wow.
So you can just fill that scratch in using those instead of just wiping right over it.
Right.
Because if you just wipe right over it, you might just get a raised surface. It might look weird.
Yes.
Even if it matches, it's not going to look right if it's higher than the surface.
Right. I've done that.
Painted over. Right. That doesn't always work. So we always recommend if people buy touch-up bottles, they should buy micro dabbers. It's the easiest way to really make those kind of repairs.
Awesome, because if we've got even more than, say, somebody maybe dinged a fender a little bit and we suction cupped it out and, you know, that kind of stuff, but we've had to do a little spot that maybe 2 or 3 inches around or something, I can actually sand that down and prepare the surface.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's 2 or 3 inches around, you don't want a bottle, that's for sure.
Right, you spray can, we can, but we'll end up with the base coat, the main, I mean, the primer, the base coat, and then the clear coat, and we can actually, it'll blend in just fine, right?
Yeah.
That is cool, because people understand clear coat is just another coat of paint. It just happens to be clear.
Exactly.
You know?
It's just another coat, and you should blend it the same way you do base coat. Blend it into the adjacent areas. You don't just paint the area of damage. You paint into the adjacent areas so that you can actually blend it into what's there.
Okay. That's kind of interesting. It really is. AutomotiveTouchUp.com. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. No problem.
All right. We can find... Also, one more question. Where do we... We're going to need probably the paint coat or something. Where can we find that?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked before we...
Because we got to figure out what color... I can't just say I've got a Chevrolet and it's a 2019 and it's red. You know?
No, absolutely. Okay, so, go to our website. It's really easy navigation, and there are sections to help just to find your color code. And when you go to those sections, you'll get a drop-down with every manufacturer right there, and then you'll go ahead and get the make underneath that, and then you'll be able to enter your year, and then it'll tell you where on that type of vehicle a color code would be located, and we'll also have high quality images there of what the paint tag actually looks like, and we'll often have it circled where the code is on those paint tags.
Yeah, because it's kind of hard to find sometimes. I remember they used to have one little thing, be paint code, to be on the doorpost, and it was just great.
I can promise,
but not anymore.
Yeah, I promise you, with our website, if you use that page, it will not be difficult to find.
All right. Paul, I'm glad I got that one question in. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, folks, we got a lot more.
Hey, folks, this week I was driving the 2020 Nissan Maxima. I know, when you say Nissan Maxima, it just doesn't elicit a lot of excitement. Well, same thing with me. I didn't feel the same way, but you know what? They changed it. In 2019... they did a mid-cycle refresh. When I mean refresh, it's almost like a redesign. It looks like a different car. If you're thinking of the old real conservative Nissan Maxima that, you know, that a lot of people will, you know, a lot of older families would drive and things like that, that's not it. This new one is really now a sports sedan. As a matter of fact, it comes with a standard 300 horsepower 3.5 liter V6, 24 valve, the whole bit. It's a hot engine. It's got the CVT transmission, but they make it work with manual shift points. It's even got paddle shifters, and they actually work. This is a big car. This would compete with an Accord or maybe a Camry or something like that, but this is not what you think. I mean, I was, like, blown away. Driving it is fun, and, you know, that's not what I expect. I'm more of an SUV guy, like everybody knows that, but this was a really cool car. They make it in five different trim levels, okay? The S, SV, SL, SR, and then the Platinum. Platinum's loaded with everything. But I had the SR, which was really hot. It was kind of a really good-looking copper colored. You know, it had some black accents, and it's got this deep V grill and the kind of jewel-like headlight. You know, it's just one of those things where if the park lights are on or the headlight's on, it actually looks really good. And very aggressive styling features, okay? And that's not what you think about when you think of a Maxima. But you know what? They've changed it. So this is a whole different deal. It's got these really neat Nissan signature daytime running lights. And they just look good. And this is their flagship sedan. You know, it's high performance and it looks it. And you get inside in the cockpit, you know, where you sit, the driver sits. It's really oriented toward the driver. This is really a driver's car, you know? They've got this, you can seat five people in it, so it's very comfortable. Mine had these little pleated seats, and they were just good-looking black seats with a trim on them, you know, kind of a orangish trim on it to match the outside of the vehicle. Nissan's added a lot of stuff to it. It's got a nice 8-inch screen, nav screen, and telematic system. It's got what they have called Safety Shield 360, and that's standard now on all the models. It's got intelligent cruise control, traffic sign recognition. So basically when it tells you that the speed limit drops from one to another, it'll tell you this and stuff like that. Intelligent driver alertness, which if you're not paying attention, it'll kind of warn you that, hey, you're being an idiot. Pay attention. It's really cool. I mean, I hate to gush about it, but it really is pretty cool. And it had everything you need in it. But the Safety Shield 360 is one of the things they added, and it really is nice. Now, basically, let me get back up a little bit. This thing starts at $34,000. You can guess for the S model, and it's pretty well loaded. You can get for $41,540, you can get the Platinum. I like the SR because it looks a little bit hotter. It comes with a lot of goodies and things like that, but it has all the backup warnings and the back seat alert, which is really nice. It has the old tire fill alarm, which basically you put air in the tires when it gets to the right level that it's supposed to. It just beeps the horn. You don't have to worry about a gauge and things like that. But it's got, like I said, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. It's got, it's called Nissan Connect, okay? And that's basically their version of kind of like OnStar. Everybody has something like that. Got the nav system, HD radio, Bluetooth hands-free, streaming audio. All the Sirius XM had a really nice Bose sound system, 11 speakers, really cool. A couple of a USB connection ports, one of them type A and one of them type C. The rear USB charge, I know this is a little thing. This is something minor, but every time at night you're digging around looking for it. These are illuminated. You can actually see them at night. You don't have to dig around and try to take your eye off the road, you know, too much and this kind of stuff. That's kind of nice. It's got the dual zone automatic temperature controls, intelligent around view monitor, which is, I call it almost like a bird's eye view. When you go to park, it'll say how close you are to the other car, and you can look and see where you are in the lane. They do that with cameras all around it. That is something Nissan came up with years ago. It's really nice. We got remote start. Thank you. Appreciate it, Nissan. Most of these, used to be imports. I know they build them here, but in Tennessee, but still, most of these cars like that, usually the big Detroit 3 are the ones that have the remote start. This one has it. I love remote start, especially on a very cold or very hot day. It's got a heated steering wheel, leather wrap wheel and things like that. It's got what's called Home Link, you know, the auto dimming mirrors, heated outside mirrors, and it'll, when you put it in reverse, they tilt down. All these little bitty things. This one has a very cool kind of a spoiler, although it's a four-door. You know, it's funny. This is a four-door that's designed to look like a two-door. And man, they do pretty good. Pretty good job. You know, it's four anti-lock brakes. It's got the vehicle immobilizer system for security. It's just got everything you'd want. Lane departure warning, intelligent lane intervention. Basically, it'll kind of grab you and pull you back in the lane. Cross traffic alert. If you're backing up, it'll tell you if somebody's coming across and you can stop before. Because people driving in parking lots drive like idiots. And so they don't know that you're coming out and they should maybe stop. But that's okay. Like I said, they have blind spot warning, all that kind of stuff. It's just neat. The seats are comfortable, the 8-way power seats. This is a really cool car. And honest to gosh, I'd kind of forgotten that they had changed the Maxima when they said I was going to get one. I was like, oh, okay. But I was
more than pleasantly surprised. I mean, I'm just really a fun car to drive, and it doesn't seem I would take this in a heartbeat over some of the competition. I tell you what, this is a really nice car, and Nissan, that 3.5 V6, they run great. I'm not real excited about the CVT transmission. They call it a Shifttronic or whatever their name is for it. But if you have to do CVTs and they're becoming so and so popular, Nissan makes a very good one. Now, you don't, it doesn't feel too bad. It doesn't have the rubber band type effect. They said the fuel economy is 30. I find myself with my foot in this thing all the time because it is so much fun to drive. So I didn't quite get 30. And it said 24 was the average. And I think I got about 22 average, but I drove it like a crazy person, which I am. We all admit that. But it was a great car, and I was very happy with it. So I hate to gush about it, but I was, you know, thank you, Nissan, for making the car fun. And they're good about that. They really have a nice lineup. And most of their cars are fun. Some of the other competition, they're good cars, but they're not fun to drive. You know, Mazda's the other one that's usually fun to drive. Some of the other two, not so much for me. So I hope you have a chance. If you're looking for an Accord or a Camry or something like that, take a look. Take a minute and stop by your Nissan dealer and look at the Maxima. Just add it to the group or look online and see them. Because once you see it, you're going to go, that's not a Maxima. And it really is. So that was the 2020 Nissan Maxima, and check it out.
And finally, Mike, how are you? Matt Perrault back with you. Time now for my automotive review. And what I was driving this week was a vehicle that threw me back to a day when I owned a couple of Volkswagen CCs. I'm a very big fan of Volkswagen sports sedans. I'm a very big fan of their German engineering, the transmission. I really like the way the vehicle handles. And so I got back-to-back for 7 years, I drove 2cc. So I was a little bit biased here going into this, but the 2019 Volkswagen Arteon 2.0 T-Cell Premium 4 line was unbelievable. This is one of the nicest-looking vehicles on the road, and this is a big key for me. I'm somebody who is... I like to drive unique-looking vehicles. I don't like cookie-cutter. I don't like driving things that everybody else has. I don't like vehicles that simply... are boring. I like vehicles that have sharp lines. I like vehicles that really stand out. And the Arteon is unbelievable. The Passat's boring. I'm not a fan of the Passat at all. But the Arteon, and this is a luxury sedan, okay? This thing can run you up to 50 grand. I mean, I had it at $47,000, okay? This is not a inexpensive vehicle. It is expensive, but it rides like it. It feels like it. You get in this thing, the engine, it goes. I'm a big fan of the four-cylinder engine. It gives you a lot of pump, a lot of pop. It really goes. It can pin you to the seat. You put it in sport mode and let it go. Eco mode's standing on regular, normal mode is okay. It's fine to drive it around. But the gas mileage is tremendous. I was getting 31 miles a gallon. We went on a long road trip to get out of the house during this quarantine period, and the vehicle just really performs nicely. It's tight around corners. It's smooth on the open road. It's very compact, and it's very, very quick when you're driving it. The luxurious features of this vehicle, it has a infotainment display that's awesome, Android Auto, Apple CarPlay, which is clearly a big thing for me. The dash is very interesting. There's a lot going on with the dash, by the way. They have all sorts of different gadgets and different things you can look at, and miles per gallon and how many miles you got left and how fast you're going. It's all kind of wacko and crazy in there, but it's a lot, okay? That's my only kind of negative, that there's a lot going on right in front of you as you're driving. But other than that, a lot of room in the front seat, a lot of room in the back seats. The trunk is enormous. I love the power trunk that it's got, and it's got it's like a hatchback almost. It comes up, and you've got all this room in the back, which I thought was really cool. I went on a big Costco run with it. So, it's a sports sedan, and it feels like it might be a little small, but it's not. It's big. It's got tons of room. I just was very, very impressed with this vehicle, and I think that it is, if you're somebody who's looking for a cheaper version of an Audi, or you don't want to go to a Mercedes, but you want to go a little higher level than a Mazda 6, I think this is your vehicle. I think that this thing just, completely impressed me, and I don't see many of these things on the road, which is really wild. 268 horsepower, turbocharged four-cylinder engine, goes, man. And I had it in the premium R line, which is the highest level. It's, you know, it's a posh vehicle. It's a luxury vehicle. You sit inside of it. You got nice leather seats. It grabs you. It, you know, really fits nice. You sit comfortable in it. It's got all the safety features you would want. A really nice, really bright rear view camera, all your lane departures and all your warnings, all your bells and whistles from a safety standpoint. They got that all that covered, but it's that German engineering. You feel that steering wheel in your hand. You feel the tightness around the corner. It's just, it's really fun. It, you know, brought me back to my CC days of why I was such a big fan of these vehicles and why I bought at least two of them for 7 years. I was driving CC. So, and a big reason why it's a unique vehicle. And look, the wheels are awesome. Really sharp looking wheels. The headlights, the grill is really, really nice. You sit in this thing, you're sitting up nice in the cockpit, but it looks really nice. It's hard to describe it without you really getting in the vehicle and seeing it, because there aren't many of those on the road. I just don't see this vehicle out all that often. And the Arteon should be selling better than it is. I mean, this thing is nice. It is fun. It's expensive. I get that. But I think it's worth the price point, given what you get from a performance standpoint, a luxury standpoint, a safety standpoint, just a look standpoint. It's a looker. It's a nice, nice vehicle. If you're looking for something unique and you're in the luxury sport sedan market, test drive this thing. Just get behind the wheel and drive it. I think you're going to be very, very happy with the 2019 and soon to be 2020 Volkswagen Arteon. And if you can get the R level, the R trim, poof, it's worth it. Engine, performance, features, it's really, really nice. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and we're back next week here on Let's Talk Wheels.